Welcome to the Sermon Podcast for Restoration Nazarene Church, where we encourage you to be the gospel today so that you can share the gospel tomorrow.
How's everybody today? Thank you for braving the weather. I trust nobody melted completely out there in the rain. That's good. That's good. We're going through a series, The Row, The Circle, and The Chair. Pastor Cody started us off with an intro and talked to us about The Row. And just a brief overview. The Row is the place where you guys are sitting. Okay, nobody was thrown. That was good. And the idea is that Pastor Cody and I are trying to bridge the gap, trying to tell us and trying to try to lead us in. But the idea isn't information, but transformation. The idea isn't that we've done our studies and we've gone to school and we've read the history and we've even sometimes we'll take the Greek and the Hebrew and translate that for you and kind of dig into richer and deeper meaning. But the idea isn't that you just get more information about the Bible. The idea is that the information transforms your heart, that you leave here less likely and more likely to continue being you, and more likely being more and more like Christ. So the idea is that our hope is that you will be like the Christ. And so the Row is one environment in which we do that. And another environment, which I'm going to talk about today, is circles or small groups. If you've been around church for a while, small groups are nothing new. But the circle groups are learning together, standing with somebody, standing next to somebody, and helping somebody along, where we learn together and we grow together, and this discipleship thing that we're going through, or learning to be more like the Christ, is this learning environment where we work together to lift one another up and to support one another in that. And then the chair is that one-on-one alone time with God, that time where you turn your phone off, you shut off all the outside noise, you get into a quiet place, and you start with God. Nobody knows you better than God. Scripture tells us He counts the hairs on our head, or numbers the hairs on our heads, and you could go to Him and say, you know, I've started the day angry, and this isn't going to work if I'm going into this meeting and I'm angry already. Or I'm sad today. Lost a parent. I'm sad today. Or God, I don't know what's happening, but I think I'm getting old. I need some energy, and coffee isn't doing it anymore. Help me, Jesus. But that time where that one-on-one alone time with God, where you allow His Spirit to come and dwell within you, speak to your heart, move you, transform you, be that power that changes you from within to be more and more like Christ. And so today I want to talk to you about this circle business. And by no means am I going to try to do an exhaustive study on what good the circles can do in your lives. I've got like four core convictions I want to talk to you about. Is that enough? I mean, most pastors have like three things that all start with the letter B or something like that. But I got four core convictions that I believe can transform this church and our lives and move us in the direction of being more and more like the Christ. And so I want to start off with a little story. When my father passed away, he was a guy that I was never worried about telling stuff that was going on in my life, you know. If I had a struggle or I was concerned or angry, I'd go to Dad. Hey, Dad, talk to me about this. And when my dad passed away, I went to Maureen, and she would tell me stuff too. But she said, Brian, why don't you have any friends? Do you think it's odd that your best friend in the world is an old lady? She said, her words, she said that to me. And I said, oh, yeah, maybe that is a little strange. She says, you need friends. You need people that you can trust and meet with and talk with. And she says, Brian, it doesn't just happen. You have to go out and find friends. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. And so I tried, Lord, if you could just send some friends into my life. I did. I prayed. I said, Lord, I just need some friends. Just send them my way. And he says, go find some. So there were a couple of guys that I knew, pastors, and I knew them, but we weren't like, we were friends in the sense that colleagues, mostly. But they were going on a youth mission trip, and neither one of them know how to build anything. And so I purposely went to them and said, hey, guys, I want to give of my gifts and talents and help you, and I'll come. I'll pay my own way. I'll just come with you. He says, well, we're having a trip down to the Rocky Point area, and if you would come and help us know what we need to buy so that when we get there, we actually are doing, and do you have any talent in showing people how to do work that don't know how to do work? I said, yeah, I actually do, you know. They come looking for work all the time, and then once you teach them something, they leave and go get a better job somewhere else and take your training and go, you know. If you run a business, you know, that's how that works. So I went, and my goal was actually to make friends with these guys. And we'd gone with a group of people, and I'd kind of hung around like that awkward kid, you know, like people were starting to leave, and I kind of hung around, and I could see these two guys like, what are we going to do with this Brian guy? And then I knew something, I knew something that was like specifically connecting to those two guys that I liked as well. And so I brought it up, and it was that spark I needed. And I, don't get me wrong, I prayed that I would make friends, and I think that that link was that spark that connected us was like a divine help. Because obviously I needed help, and I was hurting because I had lost my dad, and I didn't have anybody I could confide in, and I needed somebody to stand next to me. And these guys are now solid friends. We meet, we try to meet weekly. It doesn't happen every time, but after church, get my nap, and then after my nap, I'll go and I'll meet with these guys, and we sit around together. Maybe we'll watch a little football, but we'll also turn on each of our sermons, and we'll go through it together and give each other helpful advice. And, you know, that was a terrible sermon, Brian. You need to do better. Or what you said there spoke to me. And then we'll also link with one another in ways that, like, if one of these guys are in trouble, I want to help them because they're my friends. One of the pastors got COVID when the COVID was going around, but he got one of those really bad ones, and when he got cleared to, like, see other people, you know, you guys remember that time, right? It was only, like, a few years ago. When he got cleared to see people, he couldn't sleep, and he was spiraling downward quickly. You know, when you can't sleep, it messes with you. This was messing with him, and I can't sleep. I lay down, and I'm exhausted, but it I can't get to sleep. And it started messing with his relationships. It started messing with his spiritual life. He says, I haven't heard from God in weeks. And my heart went out to him. And I said, listen, I'm going to stand with you. And we're gonna figure this out together. And he was seeing doctors. And they were giving him like weird stuff like lorazepam and things to just like... And, you know, then his eyes get blank. And you're like, Dave, are you in there? You're like... Hello. But we started praying together. And he started doing this thing where he would go into his sanctuary and he'd walk the sanctuary and he'd walk in between the rows and walk in between the rows and walk in between and praying the whole time and praying, praying, praying. And he says, I know so-and-so sits here in this seat and I know what's going on in their life and I'm praying for them. And I knew when he was doing it, he always went at the same time. And when I thought he'd be done, I'd call him. How's it going today? What's happening in your life? Another one of these buddies, his son, went through a very rough patch. And as sometimes children do, they can't hear from their parents. I mean, some of their friends will say the same things parents said, and it's like they're geniuses, but parents are stupid for some reason. I mean, but his heart just hurt and broke for his child, you know. And we stood there and we'd pray with him, and we'd give him advice, and we would call his son and say, "Hey, just see." This is my circle group. I meet with these guys all the time, and I can tell them the deepest things in my heart, my pains, my hurts, my agonies, and they're there for me. And so this is kind of the idea that we want to do that. Now, my first core conviction is we're not supposed to travel alone. Can you say that with me? We're not supposed to travel alone. Boy, you guys are good at that. All right. I thought we'd have to do it twice, but you guys are good. You got it down. King Solomon, King David's son, considered one of the smartest men ever. I figured if we're going to learn something, let's learn something from smart guys, right? He says this, there are two are better than one. Because they have a good return on their labor. You ever work with somebody that you just click with? Man, my brother and I, if we work together, like we can feel each other's next move. And like if the two of us are working together, nobody can even compete. Like don't even try, because. And it's true. Like when two guys that are stronger together, it helps. It makes a difference, doesn't it? If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Listen, I've fallen before, and I always think of that old commercial. Help me, I've fallen, and I can't get up. And you have to have the little life alert, whatever it was. But this is like desert terrain where if you fall, you could break an ankle in a wash or a rivet or something in the dirt. And if you broke an ankle trying to walk miles and miles until you get somewhere, you need some help. Think of the Good Samaritan story. He was alone, but it wasn't that he fell. He got attacked and beat up and robbed. And it wasn't until somebody came along that it helped him. So we're not intended to travel alone. It's not the idea. It says, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? He's talking about spooning. it's a desert area, but it's a higher desert, and they do have winters there. And just like body warmth would kind of keep you through the night from chattering and whatnot. Also, they didn't have, like we have multiple bedrooms and everybody gets their own private space. They had one like sleeping area and everybody would go and sleep in the one room. Why? Because body heat. Do you guys know when everybody comes in for church at the same time, the temperature in this building just raises and we have to kick the air on just a little bit to bring the temperature down until it levels out, and then somebody puts a shawl on and says, "Pastor, it's freezing in here." And then somebody over here goes, "Oh, I'm dying. It's so hot." It's just like, but body heat was something that helped everybody out. They didn't have central air conditioning or any of that stuff, heaters. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Cord of three strands is not quickly broken. You're better together. You're not intended to do this alone. And so what's the core conviction? Good. All right, that brings us to our next core conviction. What's the point of all this? Why aren't you supposed to travel alone? The purpose is discipleship, or growing to be more like the Christ, right? Jesus was teaching on, this is not the Sermon on the Mount, but the Sermon on the Plain. I don't know if you know this, but there was another sermon series, and he was on a flat area. And it says that he went up to a flat area and began to teach. So we call it the Sermon on the Plain. I don't know who we are, but I do. Also, by the way, the Sermon on the Mount is a little deceptive. It was more like a hill, so it's like Sermon on the Hill. But anyways, and he said this, "The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher." And who's our teacher in this instance that we're talking about? Jesus. How many of you look exactly like Jesus? How many is striving to look like Jesus? And together, we can look more and more like Jesus. We can help one another out. I was angry one day, and I'd gone to this circle group of mine, and these guys are standing around. "Brian, you're brooding. What's going on?" "I'm fine. Leave me alone." They're like, "Nope, you don't get to do that here." I'm like, "Oh. I'm mad at so-and-so." And I'd just like to be mad about it. And in fact, I said this sort of thing just to make sure they knew I was mad. I said, "Brian, that doesn't sound like you at all. What do you mean? I'm allowed to be mad." You are. But you're also trying very hard to be like the Christ, and that attitude that you have, and the reaction that you're having, and the way you're responding, it's not who you've told us you wanted to be like. And so who Christ is in this moment looks like this. And what are you going to do about it, Brian? Oh. I'm going to be angry for 2 more minutes. And then I'm going to go and apologize. It's hard to apologize sometimes, isn't it? Especially when you think you're right. And maybe you are right. But the attitude you had, that's what you're really apologizing for. And who I want to be, I do want to be more and more like Christ in every moment of my life. And so I also want to respond appropriately. And I have a group of friends that'll call me out when I'm not. And the purpose is discipleship. And I want to be more and more like Christ. You know, there's people that are hurting in the church all the time. Going through a hard... look at that. I don't have glasses on my face. I went to adjust my glasses and they're not there. Brains are funny, aren't they? Do you know that people go through a hard time all the time? not all the time. I mean, there's always somebody who's struggling with something or other. Long-term relationship that ended. Something that you thought would go on forever and it didn't. You got in a fight with your wife. And it was serious this time. I mean, not just the simple stuff like you left your underwear on the bathroom floor, but like, you guys are at odds. You have a child who you thought had hurt you when you said, raise up a child in the way they should go and they will not depart from it, and here they are departing. And you're like, I thought that was a promise. Somebody lost their job. You know, the church should have like a help or something with those things, right? You know, church should stand up and do that. Well, it does. Did you know that? We have all those helps. It's you. Which brings me to the next core conviction. You are the church. You're the church. You're the one that's supposed to see people like Jesus sees them and look into their heart and know what's really going on inside of them. It says, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. He says, look, there ought to be tangible evidence of your love for one another. There ought to be things that happen in your life that shows that you love one another. How are you doing? Yeah, but you don't know that one guy. Like, seriously. He's got an agenda, and I am sick of it. Well, before I get to that next conviction, it also says, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. So this is Paul writing to the church in Thessalonica, and he's saying, listen, you guys are doing a great job encouraging one another. That's what you're supposed to be doing, encouraging one another, lifting each other up, helping each other in times of need. And listen, keep doing that. Don't just do it once. Keep doing it. Make it a pattern in your life. How are we doing? Are we encouraging one another? Yeah, but Pastor, don't you know that like people are annoying? This one lady, she comes to the small group, she talks and talks and talks and talks. This one guy comes into church and he has an agenda, and I'm watching out for him. I know you're a naive pastor and you don't see people that way, but I see him and I'm here to warn you. Yeah, you know, that leads me to the next core conviction. Say it with me. It's true, isn't it? Some people just really get under my skin. Yeah. Let's just deal with this right here now. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's not simple. Sometimes it takes you going out of your way to help somebody who really gets on your nerves sometime. Sometimes you have to drive very far. And have you seen the price of gas lately? Who can we blame for that? It's got to be one guy at the top somewhere. Well, I went to some smart guys. Have you ever heard of Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a pastor in Germany during Nazi Germany. And he says, just as surely as God desires to lead us to knowledge and genuine Christian fellowship, so surely we must be overwhelmed by a great disillusionment with others. There's no perfect church, basically, is what he's saying. Like, there's something wrong with everybody. if you're out there looking for the perfect church and you get there and something's wrong, maybe it's you. If you're in a small group and nobody's annoying, maybe you're the annoying one. But everybody's got something wrong. There's always something. Disillusionment with others, with Christians in general, and if we are fortunate ourselves, the sooner this shock of disillusionment comes to an individual and to the community, the better for both. The sooner you realize nobody's perfect, the better you're off. Why can't people just act like I do? If everybody acted like me, we'd get along just fine. Why can't you see the world the same way I see the world? Why can't you be a Democrat? Why can't you be a Republican? Why don't you just join the Tea Party? Have I pushed anybody's buttons yet? I mean, I figured, you know, if I talk about politics, that'll really get somebody riled. I was really upset yesterday. I saw this car, beautiful Cadillac. And if you know me, I like cars. By the way, the Barrett Jackson is coming up, and if anybody needs to have an excuse to go to take me. Beautiful Cadillac. And this guy had put flags and Trump stickers and all this, Trump 2024 and all this stuff, and I was so upset that he put stickers on that car. It was such a beautiful car. Don't you know when you have a beautiful car, you don't put stickers all over it? The sooner you realize that not everybody sees the world the same way you do. Or what I've come to realize is that people will do things that sometimes they don't realize why they're doing it. But sometimes deep inside they're hurting, and it's just a reaction out of their hurt, and they don't even realize how stupid they're being, or the words that they're saying are ugly. It's because they're hurting. And if you read psychology papers or anything, that's like psychology 101. People do things out of what's going on in their heart. And that's why God says he looks at the heart and sees people for who they truly are. I know a gentleman who... was abused as a small child. And even as a small child, this is later on in life, we're coming to recognize this, he didn't even realize the intricacies of what was happening. And he began to just overly assert himself in everything he did, had five jobs at one point in his life, would begin to tattoo every portion of his body to conceal what he didn't even know was inside that was hurting. Eventually he began to take drugs and alcohol and things just to like, and not even realizing the depths of all the pain that was inside. And as the pandemic grew to this like massive enclosure into your home, and he couldn't go to work and he couldn't go out and couldn't do anything, all of that welled up and it turned into a PTSD anxiety where he would just enclose upon himself and then violently throw up as his body's mental way of trying to get out whatever was this pain was inside. And this guy landed in my lap. And I'm not much of a hugger. I mean, But somehow I could see this pain and hurt and anguish. And now he was embarrassed that he'd had to run outside and throw up and couldn't get a hold of himself. And I gave him about 30 seconds or so, maybe a minute. And I went out, and he's like, "I'm so sorry. I don't know what's going on." And I could see him just like his eyes were just spinning in his head. And I said, "It's okay." And I just grabbed the back of his head, and I said, "You're all right. You're safe here." And he just bawled and wept. And I was able to help him get into a place where he could start to see what was going on inside of him and deal with those issues and deal with those things. And I believe in that moment I could see his heart, that it was his heart that was broken, his heart that was hurting, and these responses in his physical life were just responses out of a broken heart and a brokenness that he didn't know how to handle. Here's another smart guy, C.S. Lewis. You guys know who C.S. Lewis is? Wrote the Chronicles of Narnia and Mere Christianity. A lot of books. This one, The Four Loves, was something he wrote. He was a proclaimed bachelor for most of his life and then finally found a love. And when the love, when he finally married her, shortly after the marriage, she got cancer and died. And he says this, "There are no safe investments. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will most certainly be wrung and possibly broken." A friend of mine told me the other day, we were talking about love and broken hearts and all that stuff, and He says, did you give your heart to that girl?" And the other guy says, "Yeah." "You gave it to her like a gift, like this is my heart and I love you and it's yours to have." And the guy says, yeah. He says, "Well, when you give a gift away, it's theirs to do with what they want. And they can either bolster it and nurture it and help it along, or they can break it, and it's theirs to break. It's your job to be faithful." Ooh, that was heavy. I got one more smart guy here, Eugene Peterson. Do you guys know who Eugene Peterson is? If you've ever read the translation of the Bible that's the Message, and I know there's questions on whether or not that's the real translation, but it was beautifully done. He wrote this. He says, "There are no perfect churches. There are instead communities of sinners. Gathered before God week after week in towns and villages all over the world. In these communities of sinners, one of the sinners is called pastor. And given a designated responsibility in the community, the pastor's responsibility is to keep the community attentive to God." I love that. One of the sinners is called pastor. My goal is to keep you attentive to God. My goal is to point you in the direction of Jesus. My goal is to teach and teach and teach Jesus' way. And one of the things I learned as I was coming up in life and going to seminary is that the best thing you can do as a pastor is not all the duties that a pastor does. The best thing you can do as a pastor is show people that it's possible to live this life. The best thing you could do as a pastor is show the congregation that it's possible to leave this life of Jesus Christ. I do my best to live this life. Sometimes I fall short. Hopefully I have a circle group, a friend group that stands behind me and says, "Hey, let's do that better." And I can get up and do better. In Ephesians 4:2, it says this: be completely humble and gentle, be patient, bearing with one another in love. See, if you are in a group together and you actually begin to know one another, not just know their name and know what they do as a job, but know what makes them tick, then you'll see their heart. And then you can be completely humble and gentle when you see them in love. After all, that's the distinctive factor that Christ said, they will know you because you love one another, right? How are we doing on loving one another? Or are you just mad at somebody else because you think they're doing something that you don't approve of? You know what? In this group, there are people that are at all different levels of Christianity. Some of you have been Christians your entire life and are doing pretty good at it. Some of you are still new at it and haven't caught on to all the ins and outs of Jesus' life. And some of you are like, Pastor, that's great. I could see where some people need these circle groups. I'm doing pretty good on my own. Financially, we're okay. Jobs are great. Everything's working well. We don't need that. Have you ever considered that maybe they need you? Have you ever considered that maybe you are doing just fine, but it's your experience and your knowledge and the fact that you are doing just fine that you need to be in a circle group to help somebody who's not? If, you know, and if you're somebody who's doing fine, maybe it's time you opened your home and said, hey, come on over to my house one night a week for 1 hour, and we'll talk together about how you're doing. I know, maybe you don't know this, but you annoy me, but you probably should come into my life. Rhetorical question. Is it time that you opened your home? And I say open your home, but I really mean opened your life. That you can stand together with somebody and help them through a hard time. When Ann and I were growing up, we had some friends that just seemed to always be there whenever we needed them. The laddies were like a whole nother set of grandparents to my kids. And all of a sudden, we were poor and couldn't do anything. And next thing we know, hey, we're going to go skiing, and we want you guys to join us. Just hop in the car with us. We'll go. And they would take our kids skiing and do fun stuff with them. We were having a baby, and they said, listen, send the other two kids over here. We'll watch them while Ann has the baby, because you need to be there, Brian. I'm like, oh, no, I don't need to be there. They're like, Brian? Meredith always had a home that felt like home. And we lived way out here and pastored way downtown in the Biltmore. And that was back when church happened in the evenings also. You remember? I mean, it was a long time ago. People would go to church in the morning on Sunday, and then they'd go home and take a nap and come back and do it again. I mean, it was cool. We used to do that all the time. And then we would go on Wednesday nights too. And like, I saw this sign the other day. It's really hard to strengthen your spirituality when you only work out on Sunday. Or one time on Sunday or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. But they'd say, hey, you guys shouldn't drive all the way home. Come over to our house. And so Sunday after Sunday, we'd go and we'd nap on their couch. And then when we needed a nap, and I don't know if you know this, but sometimes children don't need naps the same as you do. Meredith would just find some toy to have the kids stay busy and play with. These guys loved on us and saw us as this young couple that just needed a little extra help sometimes. Maybe you could be that for somebody. Today there's a couple in this church who is spending their time in the hospital with their brand new baby that needs a little extra help. They're down at Phoenix Children's Hospital and they're looking at what they can do to help this baby. Can you think of anything a couple like that might need? Today in this church, there's a couple who they wouldn't tell you this, but they're desperate to find friends. Just somebody that's like them, who's going through the same life that they're going through, just trying to grow up and do jobs and be smart with their money, but they want somebody to do it with. Could that be you? Do you know that there's more than just one couple? Maybe the two of you might be able to find each other. Funny, this little passage that we find in Scripture, usually it's read at weddings, right? Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. And it keeps no records of wrong. Do you know that that actually was not written to couples getting married? It was written to a church that was having this problem. Be patient with one another. Be kind. How hard is it to be kind, really? What does it cost you? Don't be envious. Don't be proud. But be humble. Boy, I got this one friend who always knows everything I've ever done wrong. And what, you know what he did? Forgiveness is a part of this culture. So this list is really for a church group on how to live well with one another, even the annoying ones. So I'm here today to challenge you. Find a circle group. There's a few going on. I've had a few couples come and tell me we will open our home. If you're looking for a circle group, let me know. I want to hook you up with somebody. If you're willing to open your home and allow a group into your home one night a week, we used to do this. We'd invite people over on purpose so we'd have to clean our house. Anybody do that? Am I alone? Like, I didn't want to have a circle group because I didn't want to have to clean my house, but I knew it was good to clean my house. And we always had one room where everything went into, and we'd close the door. Nobody was let caution tape over, don't go in there, it's dangerous. Now it's my office. But I mean, I'm gonna put together a discussion paper, and I'm gonna have Amy send it out to you guys, email it all out. And it's something to just help you talk about what we talked about and talk about the scripture and say, hey, what's going on in your life? one of the questions that my buddy asked me the other day, are you having satisfying moments with God in your life? I needed that question at that time in my life. Maybe you could be the one that asks the right questions. Or maybe you're the one that needs to be asked a question. And maybe you need to stand with somebody and say, we're going to do this together. I'm so glad Maureen made me find some friends. I'm a better man today because of it, and I'll tell you that's the truth. I made friends with this crazy guy, Fred, just a nut. He's a clown. If you've ever met Fred, he's a clown. But I used to come home, and my wife would say, you're better. What do you mean? I don't know what you mean. You're better. And I used to get phone calls from Fred's wife. Fred came home in a good mood, and he hasn't been like that in a while. Thank you for being his friend. Maybe you need somebody like that in your life. And listen, if you're in a small group and it's turned into, you know, how was your week in brownies? Maybe step it up a notch. Because the goal is not just, how was your week in brownies and making friends? The goal is to be more and more like Christ. Be more and more like Christ. Okay, if I keep preaching, the other church is going to come in and I'll be late. Pray with me. Lord, Heavenly Father, in this place, you see our hearts. You know what I'm feeling inside. You know my anxiousness, you know my fears, you know my loves, you know my joys. And Lord, I pray that you would fill me with your spirit and your love. But I also pray that you would make connections in our lives with others who will walk with us and stand with us. Bring us a meal when we're hungry. Because a meal is like love on a plate. Lord, I pray that we would begin to see each other the way you see us, that we could see the hearts and lives of each and every one of us in this place, that we would know that when somebody's acting out or reacting or whatever, that there's something deeper inside them that is causing that problem. And help us to find it, help us to solve it, help us to put you in that place that heals and lifts up and strengthens and gives joy. And may you find that we are a community that loves one another, and that there are tangible evidence of love in our lives with each other. Lord, I pray this in your most heavenly name. Amen. Amen. Stand together with me. Receive the priestly blessing. And we will send you off for a great, great Sunday in the rain. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he be ever gracious unto you and cause his face to shine toward you. May he lift up his every countenance, every thought to you, and give you peace, I pray.
Thanks for joining us today. We would love to continue the conversation and connect with you. Comment, like, subscribe, follow us on the socials at RNAS Church or our website, rnaz.church.